got the shakes when I go to court. I'm so afraid the judge is going to smell me, I can't remember the subject of the case. How am I representing my client? I mean, what's this goodness? And I couldn't find any. So I didn't dwell on it. But I'll tell you what I did. I did what I was told to do, and I write down, I started, my fourth step started when I was a little kid. And it continued right up until the time that I wrote that step. And I remember the guy that I did it with never batted an eye. And he said, God, I did so many of those things and felt just like you. Thought to myself, you're a pervert. No, I did. Not being cute. I thought, no kidding, you did. I'm thinking, I wouldn't say that. And I was crying. Now, you know, they said men aren't supposed to cry. I cry. I don't know about you, but I cry. And I cried. I cried out of shame, but I also cried out of relief. It was the first time in my life that I ever had no secrets. It was the first moment that I ever remember when I finished reading that legal pad to that guy. That moment, I had for the first time in my whole life no secrets. And an overwhelming freedom. Just, it wasn't power. It was just, it's done. It's done. And it wasn't that big of a deal when I did my fifth step. And when, in the writing of the fourth step, I couldn't wait when I did, had the writing to finish my, to do my fifth. I couldn't wait. I just couldn't wait. It's like wanting to puke. I mean, when you want to puke, you can hardly wait to puke. Puke, sir. The word is vomit. I mean, because I know when I'm drinking, if I vomit, I feel somewhat better as soon as I stop. Okay? And that's kind of like the same feeling I got when I finished reading. There was a discomfort during the reading process, but a feeling of at least it's out. It's out. Okay? And I tell the people that I have the honor to listen to their fourth step, I tell them a secret. One, something that was told to me. I say, well, now that you're finished reading that, I want you to take a minute or 10 minutes or an hour or 10 hours, whatever you want, and I want you to go alone somewhere. I don't care if it's a parking lot or woods or a library or basement or your car. I don't care. I want you to be alone without distraction, and I want you to ask yourself one question. When are you going to forgive yourself? And I'm going to tell you, before you ask that question, that God forgave you the moment you did it and were sorry you did it. That might have been 20 years ago or 30 years ago or yesterday. The moment you were sorry, drunk or sober, you were forgiven. I think. My problem is, I've never forgiven me. So I say, go be alone. And ask yourself the simple question. You ready to forgive yourself? Or do you want to be God? Do you want to be just what you hate and what you've argued about all your life, if you're like me? You want to be a punishing, vindictive God who can't even forgive you? Is that what you want to be, God? Or do you just want to be the God that's offered to you in Alcoholics Anonymous, a loving, compassionate, and forgiving, and rewarding God? You can't be either, I tell him. All you can be is you. You've hung on your cross of self-pity and self-hatred as long as you need. We burn What I do is I take them. I always, there's a grotto in a church-like facility way out of town. It's where I took my fifth step. And everybody that asked me to do that process with them, we go there, rain or shine, no matter what the weather or time of year. And it's a, I don't know that it's a holy place, it's a quiet place. That's what it is, it's a quiet place. And we walk, and I listen. And when we're through, we go to a receptacle, ash can or garbage can-like thing. And I ask them to take the pages and separate them. Then I light a match, and I let them burn it. And we stand there, and we burn that, and we let those ashes fall into that can. And then I tell them that at that moment, they've never been cleaner than since the moment of their birth. They are without fault and without guilt, and can have no remorse or need no remorse, because at that moment they are as clean as they've ever been in their life. And now their bag of guilt is empty, and now they have a choice to either fill it up again or keep it empty. And when that was explained to me, that made sense and gave me hope and gave me some comfort. It really did. I hope it did somebody in this room. Alcoholics Anonymous is about change. It's about letting God change us and not resisting that grace and that power. There is no pain in change. If you're frightened to take these steps because you think they're painful, that is false. There is no pain in allowing God to help you effectuate change. The only pain that's associated with that change is in your resistance to accept God's grace. The more you fight that surrender, the more pain we have. If you're like me, and I don't know, when I say you, I don't mean that, please. I don't mean that if you're like me. That's what was explained to me. All my life I've been resisting God's grace. Because I think I'm going to fail. And if I'm going to fail, what's the use? You are going to fail. We're going to fail again and again and again. And when we fail, I don't think we offend God. God expects us to fail. That's why He didn't make us God. We're human. Humans can't but fail. Humans concede to temptation sometimes. Humans are weak sometimes. Human beings are frail sometimes. Human beings can't be all good, all loving, all trustworthy, all spiritual, all happy, all comfortable, all holy. It's not within the power of a human being. If anything offends my God, I'll tell you what offends my God. My God says, look, kid, every time you've asked for help, I've given you sufficient power and grace to overcome that. Often you have not paid any attention. I've given you the ability and the roadmap to a better life. When you fail, I'm not offended. What offends me is when you fail and don't try again. Failure is not the problem. Refusal to try might be. So if you're reluctant to take any of these steps, including 4 and 5, because you know you'll only do some dirty thing again or some dishonest thing again or some rude or crude thing again, And you say, well, if I'm going to do it again, what's the use? And I know I'm going to do it again. There's a big use. There's a freedom from putting behind you all the things that have terrorized you all your life. What a wonderful, wonderful thing Alcoholics Anonymous affords us, and why we are so reluctant to do it and get it. God Almighty, what a powerful gift. And here we are like ungrateful people saying, oh, I don't want your gift. I'd rather hang on this cross of self-pity. You know what self-pity is, I think? It's a form of ego. It's a form of self-centeredness. It's a perverse upside down. I'm bad, I'm bad. I'm always going to be bad. What's the use? I don't know. The experience of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous says there is a cure. Because if you do these things, something's going to happen. And if you continue to do these things, after you do that step, and I'm going to tell you a secret. That man I told you about in Canada was a long, long time sober. About 6 months later, called me up in Chicago. I said, I want to come and see you. I said, fine. And he came up to me, and he was smiling and beaming. He said, I took my fifth step last week. And he did that after 30-some years of sobriety. You see, you don't have to give up on yourself if you're sober a while and you haven't done them, and everybody thinks you've done them, and you've lived off of that belief. If you're uncomfortable, and if you think it's time to get rid of that bag and you'd like to be without those fears, just empty the bag. Just empty the bag. Step 6. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Now what we do is when we write that fourth step inventory, and when we disclose that to that person, we know exactly what the nature of our problems are, and we know that very little of that has to do with drinking, and that's what these books tell us. And you'll see that if you read that. It talks about feelings, and it talks about instincts. Our instinct for sex, our instinct for power, our instinct for comfort, our instinct for this, that, and the other thing. We know what our defects are. It doesn't say we're supposed to cure them and throw them out and cast them away and become wonderful people. It says, no, 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 no. Just as easy as the third step. All you got to do is be willing, entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And that's why in Alcoholics Anonymous people say pray every day. Pray every morning. Start the morning with a prayer and end the day with a prayer. That's a gimmick by which we demonstrate to ourselves our willingness. Do you know, I don't think most people in AA do that. I have not taken anybody's inventory. I can't prove what I'm saying is true or not. But what a simple thing. I once had all the beginners in a room and I asked them to do something for me. I asked them to do something that they couldn't do. I asked them if they would for 30 days put on a calendar every day when they did and when they did not say a prayer every morning and every night. And at the end of the 30 days to be honest with them and tell me how their record was. And the truth of the matter is most of them have never done it. Because there's a rebellion in us. There's a constant resistance to do. It's like it's so simple, it's meaningless. If it's easy, it must be meaningless. If it's simple, it must be meaningless. No, it's not that way at all. It's very simple. If I start the morning, and I don't know what prayers you say or what you should say, because I don't know anything about what you should do. I'll tell you, my prayer isn't a religious prayer. It's very simple. God, help me today. Help me. I pray more now than I ever did in my life. It's through the day, I walk through the loop in Chicago from court to court, and sometimes maybe it's my age is starting to creep up, but I'm starting to talk to myself in public. More and more, I notice people looking at me, and then I start whistling. Because more and more now, I find a comfort in being able to say, God, I really screwed that up. I mean, I really screwed that up. See, sometimes I get in court and I perform. And I perform more than for the judge. I perform for me and every observer. And I don't feel a sense of doing what I'm supposed to do. I feel a sense of performing. That's why I've increasingly gotten out of talking at banquets and AA conventions. I'm doing so much less of that. Because a couple years ago, I kind of started to feel like it was performing. And sometimes I think people in Alcoholics Anonymous ask certain people to do a lot of speaking, and they treat us sometimes like performers. And I think there's a difference between sharing and performing. Performing feels phony. Geez, I didn't come to Lafayette, Louisiana to have that feeling of phony. I could have stayed home and felt that way. I mean, I know how to do that by myself. I don't have to take 3 days out of my life to do that. So I don't want to do that. And more and more, the longer I'm sober, the more I find comfort in talking to God. In simple little ways. I just think, geez, I mean, what? I'm sorry. I don't want to be that way. I'll tell you what's happened to me. It used to be that when I failed, I used to hang on the cross of failure for weeks. I can turn a bad day now into a good day in a moment. I could fail 11 o'clock, but do something kind, considerate, and non-egotistical at 1 o'clock, an hour later, and feel I'm into a good day. I can turn it around now. I have the power, I've been given the power, the tools that you people have given me to be able to do that. And I just do that. Sometimes I say prayers. I don't go to church. I'm not into formal religion. My wife believes strongly in her faith. And I'm jealous of that, in a sense. I really am. Because there's such a warm, wonderful feeling about just being faithful and knowing, believing. I have to kind of struggle all the time. But I stop in church a lot. And I just sit there. I find quiet. I sit in the back of a church and I don't think God's in the church. I think God's in me. See? I think God's in you. But I don't think God's in a building. Okay? God's in a cornfield. I'm a hunter and a fisherman and an outdoorsman. I should never have been a lawyer. I'm telling you, I hate it. I chose it as a drunk. I chose it because I perceived it to be powerful, prestigious, in a way to make a lot of money. And I also had some influences in my early life that I won't get into that caused or directed me in that way. But I'm more at peace in a woods or in a cornfield, in a duck blind, or in a boat. And no distraction around, because I feel the presence of God. I was sitting on top of a mountain in British Columbia one time. And everywhere I looked, I had a rifle with me. Everywhere I looked, there was another snow-capped mountain. And I felt closer to God that day. I didn't care if there were any elk or anything, because I knew that these things existed before me and will exist after me, and I am a blink in the eye of eternity. And there's a peace that comes to that. And so often I just stop in church. I sit in the back. And I say, how you doing? Or, I'm not doing so good. Or I think about one of my kids. Or I think about how I'm living my life. Or I say, look at, I'm caught up in that money thing again. Or caught up in that how I look to others thing again. Or I'm scared. I'm just scared. See, I'm scared a lot. I've been a lawyer for 28 years, and people pay me a lot of money to do big deals. If they knew how scared I was half time, they wouldn't hire me. Okay? I've been faithful to my wife now for about, I don't know, I didn't want to think about it, but 15 years. I'm scared sometimes that I won't continue on that. I want to. I'm scared that I won't be able to make up the time to my kids that I lost. So sometimes I just say I'm scared and I need help. And I always get it. Not a flash of lightning, no bolt. It says, try, be yourself, do the best you can. Quit performing, tell them you love them. Clean up your act, don't be distracted. That's the message I got. So when I was entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character, I was ready. To the best of my ability. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. That's nothing more than the repetition of what we did at all before when we made that decision. It's just a continual saying to God, help me. Keep helping me. I need help. I continue to need help. I want to be a better person. I want to find some comfort. I want to get off the stage and quit lying or pretending. I just want to be okay. Humbly asking to remove our shortcomings. What's the big deal about that? All it says is help me. Just help me. Isn't this tough? This stuff is tough, isn't it? It's so simple. What's the big deal? Why do we resist it? Why did I resist it? I don't know. Look at the next step, how it flows right in. After you did that, those things that preceded, it's now time in this chain to do something in link number 8. Simple. Made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Now, we know. You know, I tell you, I get some newcomers. I get some guys. I sponsor a lot of people who are long-term sober. I sponsor a lot of people who are sober longer than I am. Not all. I seem to attract people who have been around AA and then are ready to leave AA. See, I don't sponsor anybody that comes to the beginner's group. See, I'll tell you why I don't do that. You remember, I got over 150 people in that beginner's group. Now, when I'm standing there, they look at me and they are susceptible to being easily influenced. And some of them think I got something special. See? Now, I know that I got what little I got. They all would say to me, and they have, would you be my sponsor? What an ego trip to be able to report to you that in the last 9 years, I've now got 1,332 pigeons. How could I do that? How could I do that? So I made a rule. I said, look, I don't sponsor newcomers. That's not true, but that's for that class. Because sponsorship is a privilege that everyone should enjoy. And I don't think I'm uniquely gifted to be a sponsor, but I sponsor a lot of guys who are like me. See, I was ready to leave AA after 3 years of sobriety and sober being so crappy and living a lie because I had never taken any steps. I was ready to leave, and other people hear that sometimes and they relate to that. Newcomers say when they're looking at this step, the only person I've harmed is myself. I hear that all the time. I said, isn't that right? Well, I know, did you burn your fourth step, I say? Because often, in most cases, in almost 100% of the cases, they didn't do any fourth step or fifth step with me. And they look at me. I say, how could you say that if you had taken a searching, fearless moral inventory? How could you say that if you were like me? And I don't know if you're like me, I say. How could I not have harmed a father who I hated? How could I have not harmed a mother that I did not honor? How could I have not harmed clients who I took money from and not gave them the best that I had to give? How could I have not harmed children who I abandoned or neglected while I was running around trying to find my own comfort in life and satisfaction of instinct? How could I have not harmed them? I mean, it doesn't make any sense for me. Now, I don't know about you. I wrote those things down and I could relate to those things. I've harmed a lot of people, directly and indirectly. I've taken advantage of people. I've used people. I haven't killed anybody. I didn't rob a bank. But I've taken from them part of their life. I've robbed them of part of their life. I involved myself in relationships that I knew were not going to last. I knew they had no hope to last. I knew they were just figments of our imagination. Those years are gone for those people. Used and abused. So when it came time for me to make a list of people I harmed, wasn't no big deal. Most of them I could not make amends to. Not most, many. But I was able to make amends to my kids. I remember I took each one, I have three daughters, and I took each one of those kids aside. And I just told them, look it. I have been a certain way all my life. I've never wanted to be that way. I always wanted to be different and better, and I wanted to have, to give you what I thought I never had, a wholesome, terror-free home with love, understanding. I never wanted to drive you and make you try to be, or want to be, or have to be something other than who you are. But I seem to be driven to do that. I want to be home more. I want to listen to your problems, not tell you, shut up, I've had a tough day. And I did all those things. I want you to know this. I'm sorry for that. And I'm going to try not to do that again. But I'm sure that I'm going to probably fall into that. And when I do, I want you to know I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to ask you to forgive me. You don't have to do that out in words. You don't have to say, I forgive you. All you got to do is remember what I'm saying. I'm going to do the best I can. And my kids were little. That's a long time ago. And it was no big deal. I felt better. I don't know how they felt. See, the purpose of this step is for me to feel better, not for the person that I address this to feel better. Okay? And I had to do what this book said, and it was very simple. See, my wife knew all the things that I had done, or she knew pretty much of what I had done. She had a sense of generalizations of what I had done. I didn't go into specifics. I said, you know and I know. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to live like that anymore. That's all. And the people on my list, and there were people I couldn't go back to because there was no sense going back into their lives and opening up wounds that hopefully they had forgotten and put out of their mind. And that's all I could do, because in this step it talks about there are people who you're not going to be able to make amends to. I go ahead of myself. I'm combining these steps. Excuse me. But in the list, very simple, who they are, flows right into step 9. Absolutely, positively, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. There are certain things we just can't go back and undo. We can't express it to them or anybody else. We leave it alone. It's no big deal. You do the best you can with what's in front of you. And that step is done. It's done. No big deal. Look at step 10 and how simple this is. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. What is personal inventory? Simple little process. Remember we talk about praying in the morning and praying at night? What's so hard about at the end of the night saying, God, I really screwed up today. Jesus. God, I'm sorry about that. I got to have that power. God, help me. I feel bad about that. I just feel bad about that. Or I did well today. I was kind and I was considerate and I did something for somebody they'll never find out and it was a good and important deed. God, I feel good about that. And I thank the God that gave me the power to do that. No big deal. You know how long it takes? Minute. Two. If you like it, three. If you're in love with it, five. If you want to wallow in it in an hour. What's the big deal about that? What's so hard about doing that? Why do people like me resist doing that? Continue to take personal inventory. It doesn't mean you got to take out a pad of pencil and a paper and write down all kinds of things. There's a sense of doing and not doing. One of the things that we, people like me, skip on that stuff all the time is very simple. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Do you know what power that is? The greatest relief I've ever gotten in my life has been immediately after I've said these words, I'm sorry. It ends it. I don't feel any more guilt. I don't feel any more trauma. It can be in the middle of a shouting match when I come to understand that I'm out of control and I stop and say, I'm sorry. It's over then. I don't have to carry it on all day. I don't have to wallow in it. I don't have to justify it. I'm sorry. What's so hard about that? You know the hardest people it is for me, guys like me, to say I'm sorry to? People I love the most. And you don't think alcoholism is a disease of perception? And upside down thinking? Why is it so hard to say to someone I love, I'm sorry? I mean, I literally give my life for my children. But I resist saying I'm sorry to them when I have been or done something or acted in a way that I know was offensive or highly critical. What's the big deal about this stuff? Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. You see, untreated alcoholism does not allow the sufferer ever to admit they're wrong. They must justify and force the other person to concede. They must win. That's untreated alcoholism. They must be right. They must not show weakness. They must not show that they're imperfect. That's untreated alcoholism. Treated alcoholism, people who have taken these steps in this order, come to understand they're not always right and they're not always wonderful and they're not, it's no big deal to be less than perfect. To not know or have to know what's right for everybody in the world. To tell everybody in the world what's right and to be right. And to structure and choreograph every instant and every relationship. It's no big deal. Say, I'm sorry. I'm off base. I was wrong. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have shouted. I shouldn't have done that. I'm wrong. No big deal. Do you know how long it took me in the program to look at a client and say, I don't know? I used to always think I had to make it up. Oh, yeah, I know. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of that. Now I look at him and I say, I don't have any idea how to fix that. You ought to get a different lawyer. That's freedom. What am I supposed to know everything? I'm supposed to be the world authority just because I'm a lawyer. I'm supposed to know everything about the law and every instance of the law and be able to fix everything. I only handle certain kinds of cases. You ask me something about something outside that, I don't have any idea. I used to not be able to tell you that. I used to have to pretend that I knew and then try to bluff my way out of that. And I say, I don't know. I don't know. What's the big deal? See, the point of this I'm trying to make here is these are not big deals. These are not difficult things. These are not things that are hard to do. Quickly, let's just go, let's skip over to this 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to prove our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Isn't that a simple thing? Take some time to be quiet and ask in moments, particularly in moments of distress and anxiety, what's your will for me? Not what's my will. What's your will for me? You know what God's will for me is? Be yourself. Do the best you can. That's all. Be yourself. Do the best you can. That's always been God's will for me. He's never willed about money or power or prestige or relationships or anything. He's never had a will for me that was in any areas like that. Those are my distractions from my conscious contact with God. God's will for me has always simply been simply this. Hey, do the best you can. Do the best you can. Be yourself. That's all. And all this step says is that we saw through quiet, through prayer or meditation. No big deal. God help me, I need help. I'm scared today. I'm not doing well today. I started angry today. You're in the car, you're halfway, you've got an hour into your day, you're already cut people off, you're using signs and saying things, and you're ready to fight. You just wake up and you want to fight, and you say to yourself, God, come on, please. You catch yourself. You take a moment and say, God, I want to stop this now. What's your will for me? You know what he's going to say? Shut up. Go to work. Do your job. That's all. That's all. No big deal. It's not a big deal. And we only pray for God's will, to knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And God has never not given us the power we've needed. If we're here, we're here as a result of the power of God and our reaction to that power. I mean, anybody that's here and had any sense of recovery in AA got to feel that there's some debt to some power. We couldn't have done this for ourselves. I mean, we've tried, and until we came here, we had no success. There's something that we owe some power, I think. So I only pray, and I ask very simple. When I can and when I will, and I don't do it all the time. I don't do it all the time. Especially when things are going good. God, when things are going good, I hardly remember to pray. And I don't have any time for meditation. I'm on a roll, kid. The hardest time for me to ever discipline myself to make this happen is when things are going good. So if you get in a habit and you do it in the morning and you do it at night and you do it all the time, you then do it in good and bad times. And it becomes a habit. And that was taught to me, and I think that it works. Now look at step 12, and it's just having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. People like me cannot have a spiritual awakening without these steps. The net result of Alcoholics Anonymous is to make me feel better about me and to come to trust in the power of God. That's the name of the game. When that happens, I never think about drinking. Never, ever think about drinking. We carry the message because I do believe, because it's in here, that if I got it and I don't share it, I don't keep it. And I really believe that's true. I think that we're all debtors. The grace of God has been so lavishly afforded to us that we owe, in the best of our ability, to just share that to the best of our ability to people who are willing to be recipients of that information. And we keep it by continuing to do it. Now look, this is my opinion only. I think that most people cheat themselves after they get sober. I think that most people pretend this is a big deal. Act like this is hard. Act like this is difficult. That it's hard to understand. These steps are simple. How long are you going to live? When are people like me going to stop cheating ourselves? When am I going to get happy? Next year? When I'm 60? When am I going to start feeling whole? 5 years from now? When I'm 23 years sober? Why not today? Now, the bottom line I'm here to report is this. I don't think that if I do all of these things to the best of my ability, I will ever be happy. Period. I think I will be happier than if I don't. I think I will never be totally comfortable. But I think I will be more comfortable than I have been. I don't think that I will be totally useful, but I think I will be better at that. You see, Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is the end. This is what I want to share with you. If you identified with the test tube experiment, and you throw away all the end drinking and all the horror scenes, and you identify with the early relief that alcohol gave to you, and why it was so captivating, and why it made you different than social drinkers, I got a secret for you. You don't have to resist the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, because they do for you, if you're the test tube, exactly what alcohol used to do for you when it worked and was wonderful. The actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, as simple as they are, as painless as they are, if you will pour those actions, 1 through 12, into your test tube, the actions of AA make fear go away. The actions of Alcoholics Anonymous make guilt go away, remorse go away, depression go away, anxiety go away, self-seeking go away. My God, don't we want those things? Why do we spend, guys like me, spend most of our time in AA talking about them? If we spent 1/5 of the time we use to talk about the steps doing them, we wouldn't have to talk about them. And we save 95% of the time we can go play golf. And I don't mean it that way. That's just cute. But, you know, it's true. We talk. And the more we talk, the more it's like a wall. We build it like, my God, look at the obstacle ahead of us, the next step. I don't know if I conveyed anything to you today except this, and I hope I did this. This is simple. This is painless. All it takes is enough pain to motivate a willingness to surrender, seek help, and accept the help that God so willingly gives all of us. There's a stream of grace that's constant in our lives. Anytime, anytime, any day, time of day, we can grab it. If you are not, if AA is not working for you like you hoped it would work when you were new, and you're starting to see the fault of the people in your group, and you're starting to see and get bored at meetings, and you're starting to be critical, and you hate to drag yourself to the meeting, and you're 2 or 22 years sober, and you have secretly not done these things, before you leave, reach up, grab that grace, and do them. They're so painless, and they're so powerful. It won't always be wonderful afterwards, and life won't be a bowl of cherries. Tell you what it'll be able to do. When your wife dies, you won't have to drink. When your child gets sick, you won't have to drink. When you lose your job, or lose the case, or lose your money, you won't have to drink or kill yourself. You won't have to live a life of depression and anxiety. When life gives us what life is, you know what life is? You know what life is? I was crazy. All my life, I thought at some point it gets good and stays good. I believed the stories that were read to me when I was a kid. And then they lived happily ever after. And I couldn't figure out when that was going to happen to me. Well, here's what's going to happen to me. I'm going to die soon. Maybe next year, maybe next week, maybe 15 or 20 years from now. That's not a long time. I won't live as long as I've lived so far. I've wasted most of my life cheating myself, figuring things out, arguing things, and making them harder. If you're like me, don't waste any more of your time. Don't waste any more time. Don't kid yourself and cheat yourself. Let AA do what AA was designed to do. Remember the foreword? Remember the foreword? Let AA do this for you. AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in nature, which is practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink, enable the sufferer to become happier, useful, and whole. Let it happen. Thank you.